You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
And we are in the studio with Tanya from Just Speak. You're the director of Just Speak, which is very cool.
Thank you.
Do you want to explain to us a little bit, before we get started talking about the exhibition that's going on and some other events, what is Just Speak?
Awesome, yeah. Well, thank you for having me. Just Speak is an organisation of young people speaking out on and speaking up on criminal justice. We want to transform our criminal justice system so that it is less racist, less punitive, and more compassionate. And we think that there's a really massive role for young people in helping to shift public attitudes and public understanding about the massive flaws with our current system, so that we can, yeah, start to kick off the change that we know is deeply, deeply necessary.
And we were just talking about this off air, but you sort of have a focus on youth issues, not completely 100%, but there is a big impetus to sort of make those changes there too. What kind of work have you been doing to lead towards those changes you want to see?
Yeah, so one of our big campaigns of the past couple of years was getting 17-year-olds included in the youth justice system, which we were successful in, along with many other organisations. And for people who aren't familiar, our youth justice system is like kind of world leading. It's really impressive. There's a real massive focus on prevention, on keeping people out of the formal system completely. And when people do enter it, there's a real emphasis on restorative justice, on understanding what drives young people to offend and how we can change the conditions that they're living in to encourage them to, you know, have a better chance at a better life. But one of the major flaws of it was that 17-year-olds were kind of arbitrarily excluded from it, even though they're young people in the eyes of the law in almost every other facet of their life. So that was really important, and we're just now seeing, so the law just changed for that in July. So we're finally seeing the fruits of our labour there, which is really important. There's still a long way to go, though. We think that the age of youth justice should be included to 21, because what we know about brain development, you know, we would have so much more... such a better and more productive impact on young people's lives if we were able to respond to them with compassion and with evidence. So that's a big part of our work. And at the moment, we're talking a lot about police cells and how many children and young people were held for far too long in really, really dangerous conditions. And we just think that that's something that needs to change urgently.
Absolutely. There's also, I think it's really awesome the way that you have a massive push towards, I guess, restorative justice systems rather than these kind of punitive justice systems. Could you sort of break that down a little bit for people who might not know what those differences are necessarily?
Yeah, for sure. So I guess the point of restorative justice is to understand that often when a harm is committed, everyone who's involved needs to be able to heal and move on from it in order to for it to not completely affect them for the rest of their life. And a big part of that is often being able to talk with the people who have you've had a terrible interaction with, you've experienced victimhood from, and hear someone apologize for what they've done, hear someone acknowledge the harm that they've done to you, have a chance for you to tell someone, this is the impact that this has had on me, this is how you've affected my life. And I think that's an extremely cathartic process for a lot of people, and also for the people involved to come together and decide what can be done to change that. So whether it's I want you to offer a formal apology, I want you to undertake these kinds of programs in order to make sure that no one else is ever hurt by you again. I'd like you to do this kind of community placement to kind of acknowledge the impact that you had on that community. So the idea really is that...
And is that something that would be mediated?
It needs to, in order for it to be safe, it needs to be mediated. And there are different kinds of restorative processes for different kinds of harm. So in some cases, if it's a really serious interpersonal harm, you may never want to be in a room with that person again. That doesn't necessarily mean that you can't go through a restorative process that helps, in which highly mediated, in which you're able to still have a form in which you, for example, record a video in which you talk about, you know, how what has happened has affected you and what you want to see from that person to make sure that that harm is, does not kind of reverberate throughout many other people's lives. So it's a really effective process for victims. A lot of victims report feeling much, have a greater sense of satisfaction with that process than they do with kind of formal court system, which often leaves victims feeling really shut out, re-traumatised, kind of bewildered by the formality and the length of time that the process takes. So we think there's huge value investing more in restorative processes.
And what kind of effect does it have on people who, I guess, who commit those harms as well? Mm. Does it have a sort of net positive effect there too, do you think?
Yeah, in many cases. I mean, it depends a lot on what else happens around the restorative process. So if there is meaningful, like, programs offered, for example, rehabilitation programs or support to address the conditions in which the offending happened. So someone was homeless or struggling with drug and alcohol addiction, or, you know, had suffered from trauma themselves, you know, as part of that restorative process, was support for those things made available to that person?
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, for sure, like, I think people say that in terms of coming to terms with what they've done and being able to heal and move on from that, it's incredibly important, because often when you know, are sort of sentenced to through a more formal, detached system, you're not actually confronted with the impact of what you've done as often, because you're removed from the community that you've harmed. And so it can be very confronting. It's not an easy process. It's a very intense intense process to go through. It's not a kind of free ride or anything like that.
No, absolutely not. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Kōrero Pono, which is the exhibition that you are putting on, Just Speak is putting on at the moment. People can go and see it. It's open already at Toitū on Ponsonby Road. It opened on the 2nd of September. So what is this exhibition about, and what are you guys hoping to sort of achieve with this?
It's an exhibition really to highlight and give a platform to people with lived experience of the criminal justice system. And the point really is to show that these people are human beings, complex people, people who've been formerly incarcerated, and also people who have family members who've been in prison or through the, you know, in and out of the justice system. So to see them as real, complex, flawed human beings like we all are, rather than just statistics.
Yeah.
But also to give them an opportunity to speak from their personal experience about what the collateral consequences of imprisonment are. And, you know, there are some incredibly devastating but really powerful stories about how people who've been to prison, sometimes for really minor things, sometimes for less minor things, you know, how much that has affected their family, their community, their ability to ever work again, their sense of self, their sense of self-worth, their, you know, the stigma that they've constantly faced, and how ineffective that is in helping us to address harm in our communities, and how ineffective, you know, all of that stigma is to, you know, all the flow-on consequences of mass incarceration, which is a massive issue for New Zealand, are not beneficial for the community at all. And it's trying to kind of use the medium of people's personal stories to tell that story.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it is definitely one of those things, if you can sort of see and understand a person's own history, it gives you much more of a human front to what is a huge issue that can be really hard to access. It, kind of almost in the way that the restorative justice system works. If you've got that human sort of element to it there, it takes it out of the big sort of theoretical conversations around it and makes it about people to people.
Yeah, exactly. And the challenges with our formal system is that, you know, the courts and stuff, that there is often a real lack of ability for people within that system, even when they want to understand who the human being is at the centre of this case, you know, what they've experienced in their life before, you know, the particular situation that brings them in front of the court, what they've experienced, who they are, why they are where they are today. And that's what we're really trying to emphasise, is how often patterns of our justice system are set really early on in life, because people have experienced trauma or violence themselves. They get, you know, there's a real intergenerational impact of imprisonment, where children of people in prison are 8 to 10 times more likely to go to prison.
That's crazy.
So it's just trying to kind of, but as you say, it's so huge.
Yeah.
It's something really hard to get your
it's
head
really
around.
It's hard to understand,
So we've, I'm very proud of this exhibition. We have, some very, very brave and courageous people who, we did portraits of the 18 storytellers, and so there they are with their faces and their stories out there for everyone to see, but I think it's really valuable.
This is so exciting. And tonight there's a panel discussion.
Yes.
So who's going to be speaking at that, and what time can people come and head along to it?
Yes, very exciting. So it's a panel discussion really about what we're just talking about, so the power of storytelling and social change, how we can use art to fuel our activism. And we've got an exciting panel. We've got Professor Kylie Quince, local badass. And
she truly is
criminology professor and all-round stellar human being. We've got comedian Angela Dravid. We've got Dominic Hoey Tourette's, and we've got Jess Hastings, who was the project coordinator for Kōrero Pono and is a stellar human being with lots of insight into the
fantastic. Yeah. So that's tonight. Is that at Studio?
Yes.
So Toy 2?
That's right. At Studio Toy 2 at 6 p.m. We've got some exciting other performances as well that'll be around it, and it'll be wrap up before 8.
Well, thank you so much, Tanya, for coming in and speaking to us. It's such an interesting and really important topic, and it sounds like a fantastic exhibition.
Awesome.
So good
thank
luck
you.
With the panel talk tonight.
Thank you.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.